Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. I've got some fun people to introduce you to today. To begin our show, twin brothers, beer brewers, who are fanatic for snow machine assisted backcountry skiing. This is where you ski or board remote powder slopes, but without spending the sweat to get there on foot or the money to get there on helicopter, you ride out on a snow machine. There's a ton of skill involved and a lot to learn, and these guys are great at talking about it. After that, we'll have a segment on the recent ski jumping and Nordic combined junior nationals held here in Anchorage. Producer Eric Bork attended. And in the second half, two more interesting people. Amy Bouchatz talks about running in Mat-Su and her mission to get outside every day of the year. And Lee Bowling tells a story about building the single track bike trails here in Anchorage. Stick with us. It's all ahead on Outdoor Explorer, Alaska Public Media's audio outdoor magazine. Well, right now in the studio, I have brothers who are doing something that is really expanding a lot. A lot more of it is happening, which is snow machine assisted backcountry skiing. And once you hear that phrase, it sounds obvious, right? Because a snow machine is a device that will get you way back into the backcountry where you might not have been able to go before. But it's a, kind of something that's it's fairly new, you know? And I think we're going to talk about this. It's a little bit of a bridging a cultural divide, because there was always the, you know, the granola crunching skiers and then the motorheads. And so now we've got both in one. And the two guys I got with me also happen to have started a new brewery in Girdwood, which I'm also really excited to hear about. You know, if, after skiing at Alyeska Resort, you could go down to the tap room and have a brew. So Brett Marenko, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
And Rory Marenko, thanks for being here.
Yeah, appreciate the opportunity.
So you guys were saying you were, you're both engineers.
Yep, mechanical engineers.
And you've both been around Alaska for quite a while. Brett, I mean, you can start, we got to start with one of you. So let's start with you. So where did the inspiration come from to use a snow machine for backcountry skiing? You were a skier first, right?
Yeah, been skiing since I was maybe 4 years old or so. So as long as I can remember. But basically when we moved up here to Alaska back in 2005, kind of had a group of friends that already lived up here and had gotten into the snow machine scene in order to access lines to ski and snowboard. Mm-hmm. So they kind of took us under their wing. And I mean, immediately upon moving to Alaska, it became evident that like the easiest way to get to the mountains was going to be not walking there.
You know, yeah, get a little quicker. Help, right?
Yeah. So it made sense. Not having trees up here, I think, is a huge thing too, compared to like the lower 48. It just makes access on a snow machine a lot easier.
Yeah.
So it seemed like a no-brainer, but there's definitely a learning curve trying to ride one of those versus if you've just skied before. It's a completely different animal.
Yeah, so, it is so different, especially in deep loose snow. To keep a snow machine like not getting stuck is a challenge.
Yeah. And snow machine technology has come a long ways in the last few years.
Yeah.
With longer, wider tracks, they're more user friendly, easier to navigate up the mountain.
Uh-huh.
And on those same lines, I mean, when you're skiing in the backcountry on a snow machine, you're usually wearing your ski boots. So ski boot technology, where there's like a Vibram sole, allows you to grip the running boards a little better.
Yeah.
And be a little more mobile, because otherwise you're slipping and sliding all over the place and
along
for the ride, more or less.
Absolutely, yeah. So Rory, tell me how you actually do this. Two guys on a machine.
So there's a few different ways to go about it. The most efficient way that we've found is it's called, there's a term, it's called Canadian style, and this comes from like some old snowboard movies where the Canadians were probably the ones that pioneered this type of thing, getting way back up in glacier valleys and stuff to ride snowboard lines and ski lines. And so you're standing side by side, you're each on your own running board. You know, kind of both holding the handlebars, or one person's holding the handlebars and the other's holding the mountain bar, which goes across the middle. So one guy's doing most of the steering. It really takes some time to kind of fine tune and work the process out, because you're sharing the weight distribution.
Well, this is it. People haven't ridden a snow machine before, and I have to admit, I was pretty old before I did, because I grew up in Alaska, and you were either a skier or a snow machine, or you were never involved.
Yeah.
But I mean, the first time I did it, I kept tipping the damn thing over in the snow, because
exactly.
It's like the balance. People think, oh, it's just like driving a car. It's not at all. There's a ton of skill involved.
Yeah, I remember the first time I went, took my snow machine out and got a little excited and basically punched the throttle in the parking lot and rolled it in the parking lot. So that was kind of a humbling experience. But, yeah.
So if you have two guys who are standing up who are riding up a mountain and trying to share that machine, that's an added bit of of skill and talent and coordination.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of my favorite people to you call it doubling, to double up with is my brother, obviously. Uh-huh. You know, we've got some twin tuition going on, so we already know what the other one's going to do.
Yeah.
And we're about the same weight, so that really helps with your weight distribution on the sled to be able to maneuver it where you want to go.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
Cool. So, did somebody take you out the first time, Brad, or did you guys just, like, jump into it? Or
yeah, one of our good college friends, Eric, he actually grew up in Alaska, and we went to school with him down in Utah, and then he convinced us basically to move up here. Mainly, I mean, we needed a job too, but the other part was the mountains and pursuing, you know, the snow. So he had kind of had some experience with that, so he was the one, him and some other friends, that kind of took us under their wing and, you know, at least showed us the ways, and then it was up to us to learn on our own.
Yeah, figuring it out.
Yeah.
He graduated a year before us, and came, he, like we said, he was born and raised up here, came back up here and actually started a film company called AK Binge.
Okay.
I think they're just kind of petered out now, but you can still find some random old footage online. So that was kind of, you know, we'd work all winter or all summer working on in the oil and gas field or on the Alyeska pipeline, and take the winters off just to ski and snow machine and pursue our dream there for a few years anyways.
Nice. Yeah, that didn't sound too bad. So what kind of skiing do you like to do? I mean, are you looking for, like, just the softest powder and long runs? Are you looking for something steep and super challenging? I mean, what's your style?
You gotta kind of listen to the mountains when you're out in them. So depending on the day, there's always the day where the opportunity presents itself, and, you know, all the stars align, the weather conditions are perfect, the snow conditions are stable. You can access some of the bigger, gnarlier, you know, steeper spine lines.
Yeah.
But a lot of the days you go out there, you see, you know, a lot of avalanche activity. For instance, driving in today, there's wind on every peak around you, you know, so.
Yeah,
it's kind of a first thing, a red flag pops
up. Like. And we're pre-recording, so it won't be that way when they hear it. But I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. There's been a
we've just gone through some crazy storms,
crazy weather events. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. All the mountains are pretty loaded with snow, and now it's blowing them around. So you know, that's the first thing. We've taken avalanche education classes on the side too, and I'd urge anyone getting into the backcountry skiing to do that first.
For sure.
You learn about the snowpack, you learn about the terrain, the weather. So
yeah,
that's a big sign. So depending on the day, you know, some days you're like, it's too steep and too, the avalanche problem is too big, so we're just going to go over into the slow angle slope and build a kicker or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Some days, the low angle pow, it's good. Some days when they present themselves, like I said, and springtime, you know, with the maritime snowpack that we have in the Turgon Pass here, definitely you get some days where the big lines are totally attainable.
Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome. And I guess when you're talking about the avalanche danger, and maybe you kick in on this, Brett, is that from talking to experts, I've heard that the snow machine perspective and the skiing perspective on assessing avalanches is as different as like a sailboat and a motorboat. Like, because on a snow machine, you're like flying through, right? And you've got to be very aware of your surroundings,
definitely.
More to a greater degree than on skis.
Not to mention the added weight of a snow machine. I mean, they're at least 500 pounds, which means, you know, that's three humans. It changes the perspective of the slope you're on, and you know, that added stress to the snowpack.
Yeah.
But then, like you're saying, you're also moving over it quicker, so potentially you're either not going to disturb it, or it's easier to get out of the way if something did happen, maybe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you're exposing yourself to that danger for a shorter period of time.
Right.
Whereas if you're just skinning up the side of the mountain, you're sitting under this avalanche zone for, you know, an hour.
Yeah, especially something that you don't yourself activate, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah, but there's definitely it's kind of a different perspective when you're walking on snow versus snow machining over it. Just, you know, you have to sort of evaluate the risk differently, definitely.
For sure. When you get up there, one guy skis down the line and the other falls on the snow machine and then go up, and then the other person gets to try it? Is that how it works?
Depending on the conditions, you know, on a super deep day, you know, hopefully you can get one of you to the top and then ride the other one down. In an ideal world, and like Brett was saying, you know, up in Alaska here, that a lot of the skiing and riding you're doing is above tree line, so that the opportunity presents itself for what we call ghost riding. So you double, both you take one snow machine up to the top, you've got one parked at the bottom, and you can literally just turn your sled around and push it down, and it makes its own way down to the bottom, and then you can both ski a line down, you know, pick up your sled, pick up the other sled, and go back up to the top again.
Okay, this is something I'm not aware of. I can see that there'll be some significant risks involved in that.
Yeah. You know, you try to put a good track in, and you do some test strides, but all in all, you know, it's powder out there, so the machines are pretty durable. So
So you're just pushing it down, and it basically it's rolling down. It's
not, yeah, yeah. The track engages and kind of breaks itself, so it makes its own way down.
You definitely want a nice flat run out at the bottom, so it'll stop on its own.
Yeah,
keep going into the gorge below.
Right.
it's a rare location and scenario where that works, but when it does, it's pretty magical.
That could make a very unfun day if your snow machine just goes off in the distance.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the other aspect. You know, people think, taking out a snow machine, you're barely using any energy. That's an easy day, but more than likely, you're getting stuck a few times, so, you know, having to dig it out or you know, try to maneuver around a 500-pound chunk of weight that's loaded with snow, and you know, as soon as it stops moving, all that snow that was, you know, wet or dry and light is now icing up and consolidating.
It's your strength workout.
It's a complimentary upper body workout to the lower body workout. Absolutely. That skiing is. Yeah.
Not very much fun though. You're just cursing and
you can't, you know, you're out having fun, you can't be too mad. But
so we were talking a little bit about where to go, and Turnagain Pass obviously is the most popular area near Anchorage. And the way it's set up by the National Forest is that left side is for skiers and right side is for snow machines. So you guys are on the right side because you've got a snow machine. And the terrain's pretty different. So right on the left side, it's all these valleys that are fairly long. On the right side is just sort of this big, long wall. So how does that work out for you?
Yeah, I mean, as a first timer, it can be imposing to just go all the way up that wall, you know, 5 minutes out of the parking lot.
Uh-huh.
But it makes access really quick. And then once you do get up on that, it's a really nice broad ridge. You can kind of ride that and look down onto a ton of lines on that other side. Like you said, yeah, Turnagain is definitely the most easiest access from Anchorage area here. But I guess another probably epicenter for that is like Thompson Pass over by Valdez.
Yep.
And it's like Turnagain Pass, but, you know, hundreds of times the size.
Just so much more terrain.
Kind of infinite, really, yeah. So
an unbelievable amount of snow and mountains.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So
long drive, though.
Yeah, definitely.
And you know, on a good year, you know, like this year where we've got snow to sea level, we've got placer drainage, Skookum 20 mile, mm-hmm. I heard just opened, Hatcher Pass, you know, in the other direction. That's some vast terrain that you can get way back into the glaciers. You're dealing
quite a different snowpack at Hatcher usually.
Yeah, exactly. It's more of a continental snowpack there, so a lot more, when you get into the avalanche perspective, a lot more variables and a lot more to consider. Mm-hmm. And it's rockier, so.
Yeah,
sleds and rocks don't usually get along. So.
Right,
and that's another risk. You know, you find yourself 20 miles back in a valley, pretty quick, and then your snow machine breaks down. Uh oh, you know, are you prepared to walk out? Can you use your buddy there? So there's a lot of communication and kind of, you know.
Right, so you want two sleds for sure.
At least,
yeah. It's Outdoor Explorer. My name is Charles Walforth. We were talking about snow machine assisted backcountry skiing. It has obvious allure. And the two brothers who are here with me talking about it are Brett and Rory Marenko. They also have the Girdwood Brewing Company, and which is a fairly new operation down in Girdwood, making craft beer and serving it. So you can go there after skiing. It strikes me that you could probably get to ski areas that almost nobody gets to ski, because unless you're on a multi-day pretty gnarly sort of trip, somebody who's just, you know, skiing is not going to get like these great distances back into the backcountry. Is that true? You really get pretty
definitely.
Far back there?
I mean, I kind of hit on that originally when we first moved up here, and you see just the vast terrain in Alaska. It's like, how do I get way back there without spending a significant amount of time walking camping or so it definitely allows you to get way back and experience some of that probably very few other people have been on. So
have you found some pretty unique places that are really, really off the beaten track?
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, I think Valdez is probably one of the sits in my mind is one of the places where you can kind of just keep going as far as you want to go, or as much gas as you have, basically.
Yeah. So. Do snow machiners in general tour these same areas? Or is it mostly you're looking for something different than they are because you're looking for skiing lines?
Yeah, they're kind of, there's definitely a different perspective on how you ride the mountain between a skier riding a snow machine and a normal snow machiner.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that they access it, but they might not get on top of the mountains. They're kind of like down in the valleys or playing on the foothills type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Versus as a skier, you want to be on top of that peak so you can ride down. So you definitely have a different perspective on how you look at the mountain. I guess the one thing I've always found too is that as a skier first, I looked at the mountain a certain way from, you know, how I'm going to ride it from an avalanche perspective, etc. snow machiners kind of have a different, you were talking about that different cultural look. And that just the way they look at a mountain too, they're kind of like looking at, oh, I just want to go straight up and high mark this, versus as a skier, you're kind of looking for like the high points where you can stay out of the guts. And sometimes the snow machiners are going like straight up the guts. So I think generally you're kind of riding a different portion of the mountain usually. But yeah,
but you're trying to get right to the top, and they're just trying to sort of like play and zoom up and zoom back down.
Yeah,
again.
Or even play in the powder fields at the bottom too. Uh-huh. So yeah, it's definitely can take a bit more energy to try and get to the top, because it tends to get steeper the farther up you go. So.
I know. Well, it was just striking me that must take a lot of skill, because on that kind of, well, probably a pretty powerful snow machine too. The first couple of times I'd go up there, I think that would be pretty intimidating going straight up a mountain.
Yeah. And there's some work to be done to put in the right path to the top. And you kind of, it's like you have to kind of build a trail sometimes. So you'll just, you know, have a couple friends, you kind of lap it and kind of groom in a trail.
A little higher each time.
Yeah. Yep. You're just kind of piggybacking on each other till finally someone crests the ridge and we got a trail in now.
So what's happening is you're going, for those who don't know much about snow machines, you're going up the mountain, you're kind of bogging down, you're going slower, you realize, I got to turn around and go down again.
Yeah.
And then the next time when you're on a trail, you're going to make it a little higher and take it all the way up.
Kind of slingshot in the previous track from before type thing. Yeah.
That sounds pretty fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that all about skiing down? Right. So what kind of sled are you guys using? Is it like one of these really long track things with a big...
Yep.
You know, with the big, I don't know, what are those things called?
Paddles.
The big paddles.
Lugs. And, you know, like I hit on earlier, snow machines have evolved a lot in the past 10 years. You know, we started out on, 144-inch, 2.5 or 2-inch paddle tracks. And now if you're on anything shorter than a 154, they make them all the way up to, like, what, 175.
Yeah.
And they're 3-inch lugs on those. So you think about that, it's a lot more surface area
to
be able to float you and drive you, keep driving when you get to the top of the mountain. And then engines have, gotten a lot more efficient and powerful. So I don't know if easier is the word, but user-friendly.
Uh-huh.
And with snow machine, with the chassis design, it's a lot easier to balance on them these days. And you're not having to, less user input is required to get the machine to go where you want it to go. All these things have come a long way too, to make it, where I look back 10 years ago, it's like, I never would have thought you could get to the top of that mountain. And now it's like, well, what's on the other side of that?
Cool. So, that power just allows you to just get up there quicker and just be more confident that you're actually going to be able to make it to the top.
Yeah. If you're initiating a hill climb, thinking, I'm wondering, how far I'm going to get up it, or like, okay, when I get to the top, how am I going to stop so that I can turn around?
To put it in perspective, on older machines, you have to like floor it full throttle the whole way. You're wheeling, you're bouncing around. Nowadays, you're like quarter throttle, just kind of moseying on up the same slope. So just a lot more control, really.
And if in case you do get stuck, you've still got some throttle left to give it, versus before you were like, well, we're doing everything we can.
Yeah.
You got to push one guy off the sled so the machine keeps going. And
do you do that?
Oh, yeah. If he doesn't jump off.
So you guys are brothers. Who gets pushed off?
The guy without the throttle, ideally. Okay. Yeah.
Guy on the left.
Yeah. So you mentioned like getting to the top, and I didn't think about this, but stopping, like some of these ridges are pretty narrow. You have to stop on a dime.
And sometimes it's your first time up there. You don't know, how much, what the cornice on the other side looks like, if it's a sheer drop, or if it's just going to roll into another easy going bowl. So there's, ideally you try to do some
scouting,
reconnaissance, some scouting, but there's an element of risk there too.
Definitely, because you're exploring and you're going places where nobody's like told you what it's like out there.
Yep. And then even if you have been there before, the snowpack and the nature of mountains is every year, every storm, they're constantly evolving. So
Cool. So you had any mishaps or issues that you kind of wish hadn't happened? I see Brett is nodding.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's part of snow machining in general is breakdowns, running into rocks, trees. Yeah.
Sleds have a mind of their own sometimes. Yeah. They like to run themselves into rocks, dive into creeks.
It had nothing to do with you, huh? Of course, if nobody's on the sled, then I guess
that's true. The most memorable was probably about this time of year. It was probably 7 years ago or something, but we were in placer drainage. And
It's actually
a big river drainage.
Christmas Eve. But,
It was Christmas Eve?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. but anyways, it was about 20 below zero, so a pretty cold day out there. We were on our way home, and Rory decided to dunk his cred sled in the creek, basically.
Oh,
so
great.
Ended up having to leave it there that day, but we came back the next day, and similar day, so it's 20 below out. It's freezing. Luckily, we were able to get it started up with minimal other maintenance. Got it out of the creek, got it started up, and he was able to ride it out, but that was definitely one of the more eventful missions.
Absolutely. Is that like one of those deals where there's a snow bridge that looks more solid than it is or something?
It was more like a terrain trap, and I was side-hilling down at the end of the day, kind of tired. Got bucked off my sled, and my sled obviously... snow machines, so that for people that don't know, they just go with path of least resistance. They're going to make their own way down, so they're just going to go downhill and find that drainage. So it jumped off a little 5 or 10 foot cliff and broke through the ice into the river.
Oh,
luckily there were like 5 or 10 other sled heads there, so we all managed to just yank it out with a rope. But and the clutch had frozen, so I borrowed a clutch off a buddy's sled, brought it back the next day, popped that back on, and was able to ride it out. So
it's the guys who I know who really like snow machining, I think they like working on motors as much as they like anything else, right? I mean, you guys are both mechanical engineers, so
yeah,
that's
I don't know
plus.
If I enjoy working on motors. it's definitely part of the what comes along with it.
You have some significant aptitude anyway.
Yeah, you have to be slightly inclined. I mean, you're gonna encounter it in the field, so you need to be able to fix something if you're 50 miles out in the backcountry.
And
so
at least a little bit these days. Kind of like cars, where you got to plug it into a computer these days to even figure out what's going wrong. They've put a lot more electronic controls into snow machines, which ideally makes them run better and need less maintenance. But then when something does go wrong, you can't just pull your spark plugs, put some gas in there, and in your carburetor and fire it up. It's a lot more difficult to diagnose. And then they've started using computers to design these to be more efficient and fit more in less space. So you basically have to dislocate an elbow or a wrist to reach some of the parts in there. So.
Which it seems like they would know that a lot of guys are going to be out and women are going to be out in places where they got to work on them, right?
Yeah, and generally I'd say they're more reliable with that technology, but you never know. So
you
definitely want to have a little bit of knowledge about your machine before you get too far back there and have to deal with that.
Having
a friend, it's always best to have a group of people so you can, if one or two do break down, you can at least get everybody else out, because when it comes down to it, it's more about your safety than your snow machine.
But of course, yeah.
With the money invested, sometimes it's...
You don't want to leave it there forever, right? So to stay on gear for another minute, how do you carry the skis on? Do you have some kind of...
No, that's a good question. I was going to touch on that. If you're touring or snowshoeing, you've usually got them on your back or on your feet. When you're on a snow machine... Well, when we started snow machining, I still carried them on my back because I didn't trust myself with my snow machine. It was going to roll. I didn't want my skis to break.
Yeah.
But once you get a little more in tune.
It's just having them on your back. It's like a wind sail. Not to mention it's adding 20 pounds to your backpack that you don't really
want. Center of gravity be higher.
Yeah, too. There's a couple manufacturers out there. I think one of the better is one out of like Pemberton, kind of the Whistler area. It's called Cheetah Factory Racing. So they basically make a rack that rivets to your snow machine tunnel, and it has some like plastic brackets and kind of like snowboard strap type things that hold your ski or snowboard on, and holds it pretty in line with the tunnel and kind of slim so that it doesn't really get in the way of riding, and then it takes all that weight off your back or whatever, so it makes it pretty trick for carrying up or down or wherever you're going.
Cool.
Yeah, and they can be integrated to where you can carry a snowboard on one side, two skis on one side, or a ski on each side. So that way, ideally, if you're doubling with a buddy that snowboards, so he can put his snowboard on one side, you got your skis on that side. So then when you're doubling up too, no one has to either carry them in their hands or on their back. You've got all that
energy free to
hold onto the handlebars or to, throw your weight around and lean out to really maneuver the sleds.
Awesome. So. Well, I want to hear a little bit about the brewery. This is a kind of a brand new one. I don't know that everybody knows about it yet. Where are you located, and what are you doing?
Yeah, Girdwood Brewing Company. We opened in March of 2017, so not quite a year ago. We're located basically in the heart of Girdwood, about a quarter mile below the resort, on the right-hand side of the road there, just below Timberline. We've got about 1,000-square-foot tasting room there. We produce all the beer right on site there, and it's just a cool spot. It was, I think anyone who has spent enough time in Girdwood was wondering when a brewery would pop up. So
no, it has.
Yep.
So are you getting, is it like people are done skiing and drop in and have a couple of beers? What is that?
Yeah, yeah, we're open noon to eight every day. So we welcome, you know, people to stop in whenever. We usually have a food truck on site on the weekends.
Nice.
So yeah, if you're coming home from a day on the slopes at Alyeska or even from Turnagain Pass, it's nice to swing in. We have beer to taste, to have on site, and you can take some to go to in crowlers or growlers. So,
yeah, sounds great, and it's going pretty well.
Yeah, couldn't be better. The community has received us, you know, with open arms. Obviously, you know, they're appreciative that we're there. It seems like they like our beers because we're having trouble keeping some of them on tap. So
yeah, great. We're literally already doubling our capacity, not even a year in. So I'd say nice. It's been a success so far.
So you guys must get along pretty well, as you know, that you can that you're there making beer all day, and then you're going out in the backcountry together all the time too.
Oh yeah, I mean, we
never fight, right?
No, definitely. Opening a new business together has stressed the relationship at times, yeah. But nothing we don't get over a beer.
Brotherly love, you know, you got to be able to dish it out, but then you know, give each other a hug. Move on with life. So
with my brother, it's always like figuring out who's the boss in any particular situation, right? You know,
yeah, Brett thinks he is.
If we're on my boat, I'm the boss. If we're on his boat, he's the boss. I don't know what we'd do if we try to run a business boat, together. Yeah. It would not be pretty. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks a lot for coming in. This is really fun. And we'll get some pictures maybe. You guys got, I'm sure it has some photos of what you do. We'll throw those up on outdoorexplorer.org. People can check that out. Put it on our Facebook. And people can find your brewery through that too. So thanks a lot for being with us, Brett Marenko and Rory Marenko. And stick with us as Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
It's Outdoor Explorer. Welcome back. I'm Eric Bork, the producer for the show. Last summer, we aired a show about the summer training program for our junior ski jumpers here in the area. Now that winter is in full effect, I wanted to follow up with that ski program and see how things are going this year. I grabbed my recording equipment, my warm clothes, and went out to Hilltop Ski Area to the Carl Ide Ski Jumping Complex to bring you this audio telegram. I started off by climbing up the many, many, many stairs so that I could try and capture exactly what it sounds like and a little bit of what it feels like to jump off that thing.
Jumper!
Our first floor jumper.
I was also able to catch up with some of the youngsters that were jumping that day. Let's hear a little bit from them.
And what's your name?
Evan Nichols.
And how old are you?
14.
And how about you?
I'm Jack Lawrence, I'm also 14. I'm from Lake Placid, New York.
Also in the Eastern Division, I come from Lyme, New Hampshire.
You guys all seem pretty excited about this last couple of jumps. How's it been going for you?
Not too great the past few days, but I'm feeling a lot better today and I'm looking forward to having some better jumps.
Yeah? And how about you?
I just like jumping, so pretty much every jump's a good jump.
And I heard some of the other jumpers saying this hill's feeling pretty good today. How's it been?
It's great. I love the conditions. It's just a great hill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what makes it a good hill? What makes that?
Well, the track's super smooth. The landing is nice. It's hard, but not too hard. And it's just it's a good jump.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
And how's the snow comparing to back home?
Well, home is 65 degrees and raining, so not much snow at home to compare it to. But yeah, like Evan said, just great hill, good conditions all around.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
You've got a lot more events coming up. Are you guys doing any of the Nordic Combined or any of that kind of stuff too?
I am not a Nordic Combined skier, but Evan is, and so are several other athletes from the East Division and other divisions around.
And how are those events looking for you, Evan?
Looking good. Last year I won U16 class at Junior Nationals, hoping to repeat this year. The ski trails are great, the jump's great, so it's looking good.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much, guys. I appreciate it.
Right, thanks.
And finally, I spoke with Karen Compton, Program Director for the Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage's Ski Jumping Program, to learn a little more about what they have going on this winter. And so it looks like you've got lots of people here today. What brought all of these folks up here? Who's here and what's going on?
We're hosting the 2018 Junior National Championships for Ski Jumping and Nordic Combined this week. So we're really excited. We have 58 jumpers from all across America. It's five divisions, East, Central, Rocky Mountain, Intermountain, and Alaska. And these kids are going to be ski jumping, and then about half of them are going to be competing in Nordic Combined. So they'll be skiing a cross-country ski race also in Kincaid.
Okay, and we were talking about that yesterday, and you said that right now not a lot of people know about that event yet. Why, and what is it?
Nordic Combined is probably one of the least known sports out there. It's one of the original Winter Olympic sports. Nordic Combined combines the sports of ski jumping and cross-country skiing. How it works is the kids ski jump, and then they take their score from the ski jump, and the winner of the jumping portion starts a cross-country ski race in a pursuit format at zero. And then you have a time penalty for every point you are behind the leader. Whoever crosses the finish line first wins. And so you could be a great ski jumper, but a poor cross-country skier, and you could win the jumping, but not even podium after the ski race, or vice versa. You could be a not very good ski jumper, but a great cross-country skier, and you could maybe make up the time penalty in the ski portion. In Alaska, in our club, most of our kids are Nordic combiners, which is unusual in this sport. Most ski jumpers only ski jump across America. And so we have so many Nordic combiners up here because we have such a strong cross-country ski culture and so many programs to choose from, and also a fantastic trail system and, you know, junior Nordic, high school, and middle school racing. So our kids are naturally drawn to Nordic combined.
And it's kind of a little bit built into our culture around here and into the city, it seems like.
Yes, we definitely have a Nordic ski culture here. And, you know, all of our kids are super excited about Keegan Randall's gold medal. And, you know, Anchorage actually is set up very well to produce Olympic Nordic combiners. I mean, Anchorage produced Alan Alborn, who up until very recently was America's best ski jumper ever. He's been to three Olympics, and now he's the coach of the U.S. women's team. And, of course, Anchorage has produced Keegan Randall, one of the best cross-country skiers from America of all time.
And speaking of all the competition in history, how are the Alaskan kids doing this week so far? I know it's just kind of starting off, but how's it looking? How's the competition looking?
I'm really excited this year because I feel like with our ability to train in the summer and fall, along with our winter training, our kids are looking better than they ever have before. They're jumping further. Of course, they always skied pretty fast. And so we're excited. We're hoping that there could be a podium finish, and we have our fingers crossed for that.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much.
Great, thank you.
Well, now we're going to talk about running on Outdoor Explorer. My guest is Amy Buschatz, who is a journalist like me. We're military.com, and she lives in Palmer. She's with the Mat-Su Running Club as a board member, and a recent Alaskan. And I always love checking in with new Alaskans to what, like, the experience of being here was like. You said that you were at home one day and you just sort of heard running through the trees, or what happened? How did you get involved in this club?
Yeah, so the Mat-Su Running Club has their weekly runs, coached workouts at the Colony High track in the valley, okay? And so I live pretty close to the Colony High track, and in the summertime there's quite a lot of trees and bushes between me and the track, but I can hear stuff happening, of course, like through the bushes. Uh-huh. All right. So does that make me a stalker? We don't know. So sometimes those sounds are the Colony High marching band, which is the only marching band in Alaska. And sometimes those sounds are sounds of sports. Okay. But this was sort of a different sound.
Like adult sound. It's a little
like adult
kids,
sounds.
Yeah.
Like it's, you know, people chatting. And I was like, what is going on over there? Well, then I find out that what is going on over there is a weekly running club. And I'm a runner. So, of course, I'm like, well, sign me up for that, quite literally, right? Mm-hmm. But then it felt really silly to me to not sign up when it's literally next door.
But you said that, like, you never really thought about, I mean, running is, why do you need a club, right? You can
right.
just run
well,
by
exactly,
yourself.
Exactly.
Right?
And I actually don't tell the club, prefer yeah. to run alone. It's sort of my quiet time. Like uh-huh. it's, you know, I do a lot of good thinking. It's like a brain dump, you know, you're running and then 2 miles in, you realize, oh, that's what's wrong. That's
right.
what's like going on
or
in my brain.
Or this is not such a big deal anymore.
Right. Like, yeah, like, because I'm running, it's fine.
Absolutely.
So
I
why do you need
way.
A club, right? But I will tell you, they, our running club does coached workouts, okay? So you're running on a track, which, again, if you like to road run or trail run, track running, kind of boring sounding, right? Mm-hmm. So I was a little hesitant about that, but I dove in and, I mean, you can't, the proof is in the pudding. Those interval, that interval running made me so much faster.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Totally
I mean,
amazing.
The coaching will improve you're running so that you are technically a better runner, which sounds like it's natural, but it's not. You need to know
right,
a few
exactly.
things. And then figuring out how fast you're running and then working on that pace,
yes.
you know, doing all that stuff
yep.
makes a huge difference.
Oh my gosh, astronomical. Okay, so the thing about this running club, now I've never been involved in another running club because again, like why do you need a running club? And I found this one through the bushes, all right. But the thing about this running club is that they have you set up in pace groups.
Mm-hmm.
So you pick your pace, and then you're running with the same folks pretty much every week, unless
right.
you were to, say, go to another pace group.
Trying to hit that pace exactly,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, or be sort of wishy-washy on what your pace is,
mm-hmm.
right? You could jump groups. And then you're, you know, you get to know these people. You're literally chasing them around the track,
right?
Okay? And you're all working towards the same goal. So that's sort of two things, right? It helps you get faster in that group. But second of all, you're never going to show up and be the person who's too slow for a group.
Right.
You know, which is really great if you're a new runner or you're sort of middle of the pack, as
mm-hmm.
it were, in a race setting. You're always going to be with people who are about the same pace as you. And so it's a great group effort and you all get faster together.
There's a sense of camaraderie and the sense of purpose that comes along with that. And
absolutely.
It's all, I mean, the lone running thing is great, but I don't, you get good fitness, but you're probably not going to get much faster if you do
right,
that.
Exactly. And you know that, like, we all have that secret fear, like, I don't want to be the last person
mm-hmm.
in this race. Like, my goal, don't be last, right?
Right.
So this really ensures that that will not happen. You know, the other crazy thing I found was that when I did go to race, all of a sudden my strategy, without me even sitting down being, you know, what is my strategy? All of a sudden, my strategy became chase the person in front of me.
Right.
Find somebody who's just a little bit faster than you, not unlike what I do in my pace group at the running club, and chase them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what made me faster in these races, was chasing this chick for 13 miles.
Right, right, right. And it turned out, right, it wasn't the wrong person to chase. That's the problem when you chase somebody who's too fast, right?
Right. Well, you know, she was, yeah, it took me a couple miles to find her,
uh-huh.
right? And she was just enough faster than I was that I just chased her.
Uh-huh.
And the funniest thing was, is that towards, this was at the Her Turn last year, which
yeah.
They've retitled the Hightail, I believe,
right.
for this
mm-hmm.
year. Okay. Towards the end of this race, she tells me, like, as I'm running behind her, I'm chasing you. And I said, well, I think maybe you're confused because I'm chasing you.
Right.
And so it was really mutually beneficial.
Uh-huh. You
yeah.
got a new friend.
I did. I got a new friend.
Did you beat her? That's the thing.
By a hair.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's all friendly until you're the
yeah,
last 100
that's
yards, right?
Right?
So the club meets like during the summer every week or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, to give the information for
yeah.
people who
so,
want to get involved.
So we're co-ed club. We did start, people might have heard of us in the past as the Valley Women's Running Club.
Okay.
So we did start as a Valley's Women Running Club. And it's actually been in existence for 20 years this year.
Wow.
Which is kind of a landmark sort of thing, right? But a couple of years ago, we became the Mat-Su Running Club. So we are co-ed.
Okay.
We still, that being said, we still have a women's only workout and a co-ed workout.
Okay.
Our women's only workouts are on Tuesday evenings at 6 p.m. at the Colony High Track, and that starts on April 3rd. Our co-ed workouts are on Wednesday evenings at 6 p.m. at the Colony High Track, and that starts on April 4th, and it runs through the summer until mid-August.
Nice. Is there a fee?
There is a fee. We are a nonprofit running club, but we do pay our coaches.
Right.
Okay, so the fee for this season is $140.
Nice. And I'm sure there's a website that we can
absolutely, matsurunningclub.org.
All right, so you'll find that at outdoorexplorer.org. So, yeah, for Valley folks who want to run, it's a really good thing to do. So you are, my guest is Amy Bouchatz, and she is a kind of a new Alaskan, a Palmer runner. And tell me how you like Alaska.
Oh, we love Alaska. When we moved up here, we had actually never been here before. My husband had been in the military. We had known friends who'd been here and stationed here. Mm-hmm. But we had never been stationed here. We had never visited the state. We had never taken a trip out here to look at houses, nothing. We sold pretty much everything we had in terms of furniture and that kind of thing. My husband got out of the active duty Army. We put the rest of our stuff in a, let the Army move some of it, and then put the rest of our stuff in our Volvo station wagon, stuffed the kids and the dog and the sort of spaces in between, and drove to Alaska from Tennessee.
That's like the old time Alaska or bust story, right?
Absolutely. It 100% is. And we had all of those Alaska or bust moments. Like, we get out of our car at a campground not long after crossing the border, and we're just mystified. What is this ground? Why is it so squishy? Well, you know, it's tundra, but we didn't know that because we'd never seen it before.
Nice.
Right? I mean, it was just very much like one of those landmark moments, you know?
Neat, neat. And what made you decide on Alaska? Because it seems a little bit strange to move here without actually visiting.
Is it that strange? Don't a lot of people do that?
Okay. No, I don't know.
All right. Well, it did strike some of our friends in the lower 48 as strange. So my husband and I really see a lot of benefit in, outdoor therapy, whether that's official or unofficial, right? Mm-hmm. He saw combat in the Army. We've struggled with sort of the ramifications of that. Mm-hmm. And so the outdoors is our therapy, and Alaska is the place for that.
Yeah. So what kind of stuff do you do as a family outdoors?
So we are, I have an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old. So we're working on it, right? Uh-huh. My 8-year-old loves to downhill ski. So we've started doing that. We're pretty excited about the Hatcher Pass experience opening.
Yeah,
so we
isn't
don't
that
have
great?
To drive to Anchorage anymore to downhill ski. And I run, we hike, we camp, we snowshoe. My husband and I backpack. This summer, we're hoping to get my sons into backpacking, incrementally.
Mm-hmm.
We are pretty much willing to try almost anything.
Yeah. Do you feel like that's been helpful for him in terms of sort of getting over or recovering or dealing with the sort of the trauma of that combat experience?
Oh, 100%. He's actually in APU's outdoor and environmental education course right
now. Nice.
Yeah. So he's using outdoor as his therapy, his personal therapy, and studying it at the same time. I actually started a project last May where I'm trying to see what happens if you spend 20 minutes outside a day, every single day for a year, regardless of weather.
You personally?
Me personally. So I have spent 20 minutes outside every single day since Memorial Day.
Wow. Running or skiing or just doing whatever.
You name it, whatever. In the summer, it was a
You're not just standing there.
No. In the summer, it was a lot easier because you could read a book on your porch, right?
Right?
You're outside, it counts, okay? And in the wintertime, you have to be moving because, it's cold. So no, not just standing there. I go on a lot of long walks. I go do something more than 20 minutes if I can possibly fit it in my day.
Mm-hmm.
I ski up in Hatcher Pass. I go for a run. I snowshoe run. We've tried. It's really pushed me to try a lot of new things too, which is fun.
That's nice. So, have you noticed anything about your outlook or the way you? I mean, you seem like a very cheerful, outgoing person, so I can't imagine like you were like down in the dumps before doing this. Has this affected you at all?
Well, okay, so I think I'm a new Alaskan, right? But this is what I've noticed, that when the sun starts to come out again, you feel sort of this sigh of relief, like, oh my God, it's so sunny, I'm so happy, right? You didn't realize you were down in the dumps before, right?
Yeah, you're dragging yourself through eating a lot of carbs, right?
You didn't really know that. So, like, you didn't articulate that, but when it starts to get light again, all of a sudden, like, oh, well, maybe I was, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So there's that, right? So I feel like I feel a little bit better about the winter than I did last year because I am outside every day. I've also noticed that something happens around the 8 to 10 minute mark, which is like this huge unintentional sigh of relief where I'm just...
Okay. I totally know what you're talking about.
And I've started to actually look at my watch to see how long I've been outside when this happens. I mean, it's like 8 to 11 minutes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Depending how stressful my day was. The other thing I've noticed is when I go outside with my kids, now sometimes I do my time before they get out of school, so they don't do this every day with me.
Mm-hmm.
But when I do take them, without fail, my 5-year-old throws a fit because he wants to keep doing whatever it is he's doing that's not outside, okay? And within just a minute or two, he is sprinting down the road, huge smile, happy to be there. you can never tell that there was a fit thrown. It's, I mean, it's like night and day. And so even they see that benefit.
I think you put your finger on something that's so important, which is having this habit, which you've created for yourself. I mean,
right.
Whatever the outcome is, that you're going to do it every
right.
day.
Yep.
Or you would like feel like you're a failure. You didn't complete your project, right? And that forces you out, because a lot of times in the winter, at least even for me, and I'm a fanatic about this stuff, I just don't want to do it. I just want to like, and it's not really that I don't want to do it. It's just like there's a sort of the evil one inside my head is saying, no, just sit down. You know, you don't need to do a crossword puzzle.
Oh, absolutely.
Get online. And then once you're out, like as you say, like 5-10 minutes, boom, something happens.
Absolutely. There are definitely days. Now, it's not as many days as there used to be because it has become a habit. But there are definitely days that I'm like, I have to get my 20 minutes in and I don't have 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be intentional about this. Now, a couple weeks ago, I think I was getting the, oh, there's that crazy mom look from some of the parents in the parking lot at school, because I was literally pacing in front of my kid's school waiting for school to get out. I had gotten there about 15 minutes early. I thought, oh, they can spend 5 minutes on the playground after school. I mean, it's snowing, but it was one of those magical valley days where it was not windy.
Yeah.
And the sun was shining. And that, I mean, that was the best part of my day, walking back and forth, of course, because you have to keep moving because it's cold, walking back and forth in front of my kid's school with the sun on my face. You know, I had to bust out my sunglasses. What's that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty great.
So even just walking around a parking lot will do it.
I think so.
Absolutely. The other thing, I don't know if you've run into this, but sometimes if you have like a little muscle pull or you have some kind of minor injury or something, that will be the thing that keeps you indoors. And then after a little while passes, you can break the habit of being outdoors, and that can be something that affects your mood. And I totally think that there's a mood aspect to this, which is completely related to the way the blood is moving through your body or something. I mean, there's something about being outdoors that's super therapeutic.
Yeah, I agree. I came home from the Marine Corps Marathon last October, which I ran in Washington, D.C.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I flew home. It's like this tremendously long flight.
Yeah.
It's the day after a marathon, so you're tight and tired anyway, you know, and you just flew next to people you don't know. Like, none of these are attitude uplifters, right?
Right, right.
And I get home, and my Achilles has decided that it didn't hurt during the marathon. It didn't hurt right after the marathon. But today we are going to be extremely painful and make you think that maybe you're injured and you're never going to be able to run again. And just, you know, all those negative thoughts.
These cosmic significance,
yes,
of what's
exactly.
Just happened. Right.
And so I was like, well, you know, I've been flying all day. I haven't been outside. I got to get my 20 minutes. And I had just come from Washington, D.C., where it's like 67 and sunny.
Nice, yeah.
And it had snowed here for the first time while I was gone.
Right.
So we get home, you know, I put on my snow boots. I put away the shorts. All right, gotta go outside. But that walk was, you know, it obviously stuck with me because that was in October, and I still remember that exact day and
yeah.
that walk. Right. I actually take a picture every day outside
oh,
to
nice.
Document the fact that I did this. I'm on Instagram at Humans Outside, so
okay.
you can follow us.
We
if
could
you
link
want.
That at outdoorexplore.org
yeah,
too. Yeah,
if you want to. You know, the running club plays a big part of that because that is a guaranteed outside day once a week for me.
Cool. Well, thanks for coming in, Amy. This has really been fun.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Amy Bouchotz, she is a board member of the Mat-Su Running Club. She's a journalist with military.com. She's a new Alaskan. Stick with us as Outdoor Explorer continues. Our next segment is another in our series coming from Trail Tales, the event put on in downtown Anchorage by Alaska Trails to capture outdoor stories from the community. We're going to hear a story by Lee Bowling, who has been on the show before and is one of the key leaders bringing single-track bike trails to the city.
All right, thank you. So 4 years ago in 2013, I was working on the second phase of the Kincaid single-track trail project. That's all the trails on the north side of Kincaid. And I got really bad news. This was in like April. Got really bad news. All of a sudden, the airport, we were going to build trails on the north side of Little Campbell Lake. And that was airport land. And we thought that we could build there because it was part of the park. Turns out the airport did not want us to build on that land. And so all of a sudden, this trail project that we had that was going to be like 7 or 8 miles was like cut down to, you know, 3 miles or 4 miles. And so I was really bummed out about that. So I went to my dining room And because in my dining room, I have a huge map of Kincaid, which my wife loves. Actually, she hates that map. And in that map, it's like the whole map, and I can sit there with my Sharpie marker or my pencil and like draw in different lines and stuff like that and think about stuff. And I was like, well, man, okay, if we can't go here, maybe we could do a trail that goes from Raspberry all the way to the Coastal Trail. It's like, man, that would be awesome. Who wouldn't like that? And I was looking closer, and I'm like, wow, we have to go through an archery range to make that happen. So better call up the archery people and let them know we want to go around their archery range. And so I call them up, set a meeting for Wednesday the next week. So I'm at work. This is Thursday. And all of a sudden, my calendar goes off, ding, ding, ding. Dentist appointment, 9 a.m. Friday. And my heart sunk. This wasn't any normal dentist appointment, okay? I have been going through like a multi-year surgery stuff to replace my two front teeth right here, okay? Because when I was 8 years old, I had an epic snowball fight sledding accident where a saucer sled hit me in the face and broke off my front teeth. And so anyway, so Friday comes around, I do my surgery. And so just to back up too, I already had one tooth removed at that point, and I was wearing this flipper with a fake tooth in the front of it. It was an awesome party trick because you could hit the top and, you know, pop down. Kids loved it. It's great. Uncle Lee was a hit at the parties. And so this was my second surgery, or actually it was like the fourth one, where I was going to get the other tooth pulled out, and I was going to wear a flipper that had two front teeth in the front. Even better party tricks. So the weekend comes, you know, I do the surgery, and I just get destroyed. This was the worst one that I had. It felt like a whole pack of horses just, like, trample over my face. I looked like a Who from Whoville. You know, this whole part just kind of popped out like that. And so Monday rolls around, Monday morning, and I get up. I'm like, all right, this is it. Walk to my mirror, look at my flipper, and I go to put it in, and it won't fit. My flipper won't fit. And so I call up my dentist. I say, doctor, like, my flipper, it won't fit. He's like, yeah, Lee, no, you're not supposed to wear that for a whole week. What? A whole week? I can't wear this flipper for a whole week? He's like, yeah, you're so swolled up, you can't wear it for a whole week. Like, I'm a professional engineer. I got to talk to clients. I got to, like, talk to people. And he's like, Lee, your implants are going to be for life. Don't mess it up. So, I'm like, look in the mirror. I'm like, all right, Lee, you're going to work. So I went to work, and that was the most humbling experience of my entire life. Look at your neighbor and look how big your two front teeth are, and imagine I'm gone. Okay? Just a black hole. And so work was rough. I had to tell the story on repeat over and over and over again. And I got made fun of a lot, which was pretty funny too. So anyway, all of a sudden, ding, 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 phone goes off calendar. Oh man, Wednesday, archery, public meeting. Oh man, and I'm getting pretty nervous at this point. And so it's right before the meeting. We're meeting downtown Anchorage here, a small little you know, kind of building downtown. I meet up with Chad and Ryan and Maeve right before, and I'm like, guys, I don't have my two front teeth. They're like, what? I'm like, yeah, and I told them the story, and I'm like, but we need archery. We need to get this through archery, otherwise our project is, like, cut in half. Like, we need for this to happen, and we have our meeting with Parks and Rec in, like, a month, and if we don't get this settled up, like, it's going to be bad. They're like, okay, yeah, you should do it. So we walk into the building, and we go. The first thing, you don't go into the building, you, like, immediately go downstairs. Yeah, so we all walk downstairs. We walk into a full basement, and there's, like, 40 people down there. And they actually had their meeting, like, 30 minutes ahead of time. So we walked into the meeting that was going on, and the head archery guy looks over, and he's like, Lee Bowling, STA? I'm like, yeah, that's me. He's like, yeah, we're waiting for you. You're ready to start. Come to the front and tell everyone how you want to build a trail through the archery range. So I'm like, oh, man. So I walk to the front. I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. So I say, hello, my name's Lee Bowling. I'm with Single Track Advocates, and I don't have my two front teeth. And that got a good round of laughter. Someone was like, are you from Alabama or something? I was like, no, but my dad's from Alabama. And they thought that was pretty funny. And as I was looking out in the crowd of the 40 people, I started realizing, I'm like, man, like half these people look like they're a member of ZZ Top. Like they got the beards and the tattooed arms and the leather vests and the hat thingy from Hell's Angels type of stuff. And I was like, man, not having my two front teeth, I might have some serious street cred with these folks. This is awesome. And so, but that was the high point of the meeting, actually. It went down from there. And everybody, so I couldn't get it out of people's mind that we didn't want to build through the Archie Range. We just wanted to try and figure out how to get around it. And it got pretty hot and tense there, and Chad was like getting ready for a brawl. He's like, man, we're outnumbered. This could get ugly. And finally, I was like, okay, everybody, hold on. Let's stop. So I got my map from the dining room. Actually, I made a copy of it because I didn't want to move that one. I got a copy of my map because it's so good. I got a copy of that map. And I taped it on the wall behind me, and I got out my Sharpie marker, and I handed it to the head archery guy, and I was like, we need to get from here to here. So let's draw it in. And so we all huddled around there, the head archery guys, everyone was around there. We started looking at all the different options and stuff, and you know, the archery people were talking about, you know, rogue arrows over ski trails, and I was like, we need to stay far away from the Archie Range. And so within just a couple minutes, actually, it really didn't take that long once we had the marker and the map, within a couple minutes, we drew in Middle Earth, the Middle Earth Trail from the, what is a nice downhill? The Nordic Trail downhill roller coaster and Elliott's Climb. So we drew in that line right between those two trails over there. And we drew it in, and everyone kind of looked at each other, and everyone just super fired up and excited. We started giving high fives. I think all 15 members of ZZ Top gave me man hugs. That's how fired up everyone, because it was like 40 people, and we like all came up with a solution that everyone was really pumped on. We just had to get it through the Nordic Ski Association of where we wanted to cross their trail, and they were actually okay with that. So that area was actually so sick that we had to put two other trails in there, which was Second Breakfast and then the Northwest Passage Trail, which is my favorite. So that is how Middle Earth and all those trails got made, was because of archery and working with them to get that through. And the moral of the story that I learned is that no matter what someone looks like, you always got to treat them with respect, especially if they're missing their two front teeth. So that's my story.
Thank you.
That was Lee Bowling speaking at the Trail Tales event put on by Alaska Trails. You can learn more about Alaska Trails through the link you'll find on our website at outdoorexplorer.org. Just click on today's show. Well, that's it for today's edition of Outdoor Explorer. I want to thank my earlier guests, Brett and Rory Marenko, who were talking about snow machine-assisted backcountry skiing. And we also heard from Amy Bouchot, board member of the Mat-Su Running Club. My name is Charles Wolforth. Our producer for Outdoor Explorer is Eric Bork. Assistant producer is Hannah Duro. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.